Good morning and welcome to The Morning Show with Phil Huff and
Julie Calamine. Good morning, Phil.
And today we have two guests in the studio, Regan Plum and Eric Grace from the Kinnixu Land Trust. We'll be talking about the BioBlitz and a whole lot more of land trust issues. Good morning.
Good morning, Phil. Hi, Julie.
Hi,
Good
Regan.
Morning. Good morning. Yeah.
Oh, Eric.
First, we're going to look at the weather and talk about a couple of other things, and then we'll get right into the interview. Today, we have sunny skies. Driving in was just absolutely fabulous coming across Long Bridge looking up at the mountains. It should be turning mostly cloudy tonight with a high today of 75, a low overnight of 50. Tomorrow, we have a slight chance of showers with 20%. Daytime high for the next day in the 70s, lows in the 50s. Chance of rain is increasing on Thursday night. It's getting a little cooler. It'll be down into the low 60s during the day and 40s at night. And then Friday and Saturday and Sunday, it looks like more rain's on the way, 50 to 60% chance of rain.
Well, that's some good news. Where is this rain?
Well, it's springtime. It should be raining.
We need to have some rain, and it's not been here enough.
So if you have your outdoor activities to get in, best to get them in the next day or two if you can.
We were sure seeing people out over the weekend doing their weekend outdoor activities. People were kayaking. It looked like the Huckleberry folks were out scoping things out, not ready yet, but out scouting.
Yeah, lots of scouting and gardening and last-minute morel picking, I think, going on.
I think so, and I noticed some people out looking for antler sheds. I'm not sure if it's the end of the season for that or the beginning. I don't know enough about it, or is it ongoing?
For some people, it's ongoing. Anyway, the big event today, of course, is primary election day. Get out and vote.
Very important.
This weekend is a big weekend for Sandpoint. Julie, you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Well, sure. Coming up this weekend, we've got Lost in the 50s. And as everyone knows, that's all about cars and 50s music. It's going to be wonderful. KRFY is contributing with some music over the weekend. Leading up to that, we had an interesting movie over the weekend. That was at the Bonner County Museum, an old classic from the 50s, Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Don't know if you all saw that or not, but it would have been a good lead into this weekend. Why don't I go ahead with a quote to lead us into our interview today?
Sure. Go ahead, Julie.
All right. So here we are. A true conservationist is a man who knows that the world is not given by his fathers, but borrowed from his children. And that was John James Audubon.
Yeah. And so another big thing happening this weekend is the BioBlitz. Let's jump right into that. Tell us more, Eric, Grace, and Regan.
Well, thank you, Phil. Just by way of introduction, I'm Eric Grace. I'm the executive director for the Kinnixu Land Trust. We are a land trust located here in Sandpoint, Idaho, and operate over in Bonner County and Sanders County in Montana. We're here today primarily to talk about an event that we have coming up this weekend. And to do that, I will kick it over to Regan, who is our conservation staff and also does a lot of education work.
All right. Thanks, Eric. We are so excited about the BioBlitz coming this weekend. A BioBlitz is a 24-hour race against time to document as many species of plants and animals as possible on a discrete piece of property. And we're going to be kicking off the first ever Sandpoint BioBlitz at 2 p.m. this Friday afternoon. We'll be working on the University of Idaho Research and Extension property on Boyer, just beyond Super 1. And we have planned 9 different inventory teams that will be taking a look at everything from birds to bats and fish to fungi. We've got regional experts joining us from the University of Idaho, Washington State University, Idaho Fish and Game, Bureau of Land Management, and all sorts of wonderful local community experts, too. In addition to the scientific surveys, we have a host of community presentations. You can come kiss a fish or help us catch a bat, all sorts of cool programs for kids, and everything is free and open to the public. We'll be having a community picnic on Friday evening that Eric's going to speak some more on, followed by a campfire with live music, goodies, and a storytelling session. So lots of fun things going on. You can find out more by calling us at the Kinnixu Land Trust, 263-9471, or check our website.
So does the fish have to be willing?
That's a very good question, Phil. I'll have to get back to you on that.
Good answer. So you're looking for both flora and fauna. We're looking for plants and animals and all of the diversity of life that might be out there?
Absolutely. This is going to be a really exciting chance to check out what sort of biodiversity exists right here within the city limits of Sandpoint. So I'm really excited to get a count. You know, it's hard to say how many we'll uncover.
So is it a catalog of the different species? You just check a box, we found a rock lichen, or are you trying to get any kind of population estimates? Or is it like the backyard bird count where if five flickers are there, you note five at one time?
It's just going to be a species count. So we're just going to try to document as many different types of plants and animals as we can. Good question.
And the team, is that all professionals or volunteers too?
You know, the teams are each a combination. We have a resource professional that's leading each team, and then a handful of interested community members, backyard naturalists. We have students from a couple different schools in town that are going to be participating. So a real combination. It's going to be a neat opportunity for people, for local people, to be learning from and alongside professional scientists.
It sounds like a great way to celebrate springtime.
Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit how it fits in with the general scope of work that the Kinnickso Land Trust does.
That's a really good question, Phil. And when you think of a land trust, basically you think of an organization, or if you know what a land trust is, you think of an organization that is committed to working with private landowners to protect property, to protect resources that are on those properties. So that's really the primary focus and the primary mission for the Kinnickso Land Trust. We were formed in 2002 as part of an Avista Utilities relicensing of their dams on the Clark Fork River. And as part of those relicensing, they in essence put some mitigation dollars aside and helped form a land trust to do some permanent land protection to work with the private landowners that they were doing restoration work. Cooperating with those landowners. Since then, we've broadened our scope. We still do a lot of the mitigation work with Avista. We do a lot of stream bank land protection, but we've made a real effort to do more land conservation that also has more of an impact on the individuals as opposed to fish or wildlife or habitat. So we're doing programs like the BioBlitz, which is really an effort on our part to connect people to nature. We feel that that's, you know, that's something that's being lost in our community these days.
So there's the land conservation, private land conservation, started with the Avista mitigation, focusing on wetlands, and now there's an education component. But in between the scope, the mission, the vision is gone beyond just mitigating for the loss of habitat by the power companies, right?
Absolutely. There's a lot of really important habitat still in North Idaho and Northwest Montana that we feel has significant values for conservation. So we started out primarily looking at stream bank habitat protection, but quickly we realized that there's also a lot of really important agriculture land that probably should be protected. There's a lot of really important forest resources that should be protected. There's a lot of important scenic areas and places that have public access for trails, for outdoor recreation. So we quickly branched out into that kind of work, really trying to, you know, in a sense, protect what makes North Idaho a spectacular place to live, to work, to recreate, to raise a family, and to make a life.
And so the distinction in the work you do, these are private land easements versus public land protection that other organizations might work on. Do you want to draw the line or draw the distinction between the work you do and what other conservation groups do?
Sure. As a lot of our listeners probably know, there are a number of environmental groups here in town, and all of them have a very specific niche. For example, there's some groups like the Idaho Conservation League or the Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness that do a lot of sort of advocacy work. They do a lot of public land use work to ensure that our public lands are being managed a certain way. The Kinnickso Land Trust does not get involved in those types of issues. We strictly work with private landowners who have land that we feel and the landowners feel have important conservation values. For example, they have important habitat, or they have important farm soil resources, or they have important timber resources. And if those properties are converted to to non-open space uses. For example, if they're subdivided and built on, or if they're used for open pit mining, we're going to lose those conservation values. So the Kinnickswood Land Trust has tools that we can use to partner with those landowners. It's always on a voluntary basis. We have no regulatory authority, but we have tools that we can use to work with those private property landowners to ensure that their property stays in an open state forever. For example, the primary tool we use is what's called a conservation easement, which is a permanent restriction that you as a landowner can put on your property in coordination with the Kinnickswood Land Trust. Essentially, you have the ability to sever the development rights from your property. The benefits to that is that you maintain ownership of it. You do transfer these development rights to the Kinnickswood Land Trust. We cannot come and build on your property, obviously. We, in essence, retire those development rights, which ensures that the property is protected in perpetuity forever. You maintain ownership of it, so if you want to continue hunting on the property, you're doing some limited timber harvesting or farming the land, you still retain that right to do it. However, the property will be guaranteed to be as open space, protecting the conservation significance of the land, as I said, forever.
Yeah. Eric, help me understand. I understand in Idaho, of course, we have federal lands, state lands. We have organizations like yourselves. And I'm wanting to better understand where exactly you fit in, why it would be important that you exist versus just having our state park, our federal BLM lands, et cetera.
Not to be too critical on the government, but I think what we've found in the last 20 or 30 years is federal, state, and local governments have divorced themselves from the land protection business. It's very rare that the federal government is actually doing additional acquisitions for open space protection. Certainly in the state of Idaho, there's very little of additional land being protected by the state. And in Bonner County and Sandpoint and some of the communities we work, not much of this work is happening. So it's really drawn on the private sector to do this kind of work. So that's given a rise to groups like the Kinnickswood Land Trust. There's actually 1,200 land trusts around the country that are doing this type of conservation work. It's really drawn on groups like us to fill that void. I think also an important component of the work we do is that we're driven by the community. The community really decides what land we should be protecting. You know, we're a non-for-profit. We have a board of directors that represents the community. We have fundraising that happens within the community. So we really are here working for the benefit of the people in Sandpoint, Bonner's Ferry, Clark Fork, Knox and Heron, Montana, to do the conservation work that the communities want to see done.
So 1,200 land trusts, that's a whole lot of land trust going on.
Oh, yeah, it is. And
how does your work differ, or how is it similar to the work that's undergoing by the other 1,199?
Well, a lot of the tools that we use are the same. The conservation easement is a instrument that's used around the country at this point by almost all of the land trusts that are doing work like this. The common question we get is, you know, what's the difference between you and the Nature Conservancy? You know, the Nature Conservancy is the big player nationally, headquartered in Washington, D.C. They work quite extensively up here in Idaho as well. The difference between us is that, you know, while the Nature Conservancy is doing some fantastic work, they are driven by conservation work that's happening in Washington. So they have a sort of a 40,000-foot view of the landscape. Okay. And they're doing the larger projects, working, for example, with the timber companies on large-scale conservation initiatives. However, the Kinnickswood Land Trust, as I just said, is more driven by the community. So we work with the community, the people who live here, who are going to decide where and what type of conservation work we want to have happen.
I'm hearing you say that your priorities are more local, and does that then translate into local species, local microclimates? What makes it local and better than the larger organization?
That is a very complicated question.
We've got time.
Yeah, we have, you know, regional differences in ecosystems, habitat types, and species. But I think more important than that is coming back to the community. And, you know, for example, when we were doing the fish habitat mitigation work with Avista, at that time the community didn't really know that we existed and that we were doing land protection services, because most people don't really think too deeply about bull trout habitat protection. While that is very important that we're doing bull trout habitat protection because it's a threatened species, we were missing the opportunity to work with the other 96% of the population that we're here to serve. The people who don't necessarily, you know, it's not that they don't care about bull trout, but it's not meaningful, it's not relevant to them. So we're trying now to find those conservation projects that do bring meaning and relevancy to a much larger section of the population.
So with all those other land trusts and overlapping scopes or visions or priorities, do sometimes, I'm supposing, come across a landowner interested in a conservation easement and it might be more appropriate for another organization, or they might give a referral to you. You tell us about how you work maybe cooperatively with some of the other land trusts.
Sure, and the example of the Nature Conservancy is a really good illustration of how we work. Since they do have an office, they're based out of Moscow, they actually have a staff person up in Banos Ferry as well. They're not necessarily going to be interested in protecting the 100-acre parcel that, you know, has really important access to a public land opportunity, for example. So they would probably refer that project to us. And we have a very good working relationship with the staff there. If it's a large project that we just don't have the capacity to do, a large timber land protection project, which might require some big influx of capital, we would probably refer that to the Nature Conservancy because they just have the resources and the bandwidth to do something like that. There is another organization down in Spokane, the Inland Northwest Land Conservancy, and they operate in Kootenai County and Bonner County as well. And we're always sharing our information with them. You know, they have relationships with landowners. We have relationships with landowners. And what we find really is the work that we do is relationship-based. So if they know folks that want to do land protection but don't necessarily want to work with the outfit from Spokane, they might refer those folks to us, and vice versa. There's no black and white on this, but we do have very good working relationships with all these other groups.
So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to listener-supported community radio for North Idaho at 88.5 FM. This morning we're talking with Eric Grace and Regan Plum from the Kinnexu Land Trust. Tell us a little bit more about this accreditation award. Evidently you must be a leader in your industry.
we would like to think so. About 7 or 8 years ago, there's an organization called the Land Trust Alliance, which is the umbrella group for all of the 1,200 land trusts around the country. And they realized it was in the industry's best interest to have a formal process of evaluating the standards and practices, in other words, evaluating the operating methods and procedures of each of the individual land trusts. So they basically created this accreditation program. It is a very rigorous process of going through a very detailed application where an independent body is reviewing the type of work that we do. You can imagine when we're dealing with conservation easements, because it is ownership of property interests, these are very legal documents, and so we want to make sure that we're doing all of these projects to the highest standards as possible. We do a lot of fundraising, and so the Accreditation Commission wants to make sure that the fundraising we are doing is ethical, that we're not, for example, giving poor information to our donors. We do have a large stewardship responsibility. When we do a conservation easement, we have to ensure that the terms of those easements are being upheld. So the Accreditation Commission takes a very very close look at how are we managing and monitoring the properties that we are protecting. And once we've checked off all the right boxes and answered all the questions according to their satisfaction, they then award us the accreditation seal. which we just received in April. It was about a two-year process to go through.
So it sounds like very interesting work from the standpoint of working on something with lofty ideals, but a lot of real nudgy detail. It must take a unique personality that works for a land trust. And tell us how you became engaged in that.
I'll start with this and then refer it to Reagan, and it'll be interesting to see our two stories. I became involved in this because I grew up in a farming family, spent a lot of time outside fishing and horseback riding. And when I was going through college, my family actually started working on doing some conservation easements on our family land as well. And that really piqued my curiosity about, you know, wow, this is a really powerful tool that families can use to ensure that their property remains protected in perpetuity. And that, you know, working with a private land trust would be a great opportunity to, you know, to have that ability to, you know, take this wonderful work that I had just gone through with my family and transfer that on to other families and to future generations. Reagan, why don't you say how you got into this?
Yeah, my background's in wildlife biology and education, and I was landed here in Sandpoint and was looking for something a little new and different, something really meaningful where I could be making an impact in my new community. And I kind of fell into this, but it felt like just a perfect nexus of the various directions I've taken in schooling and professionally. I really get a lot of gratification from helping landowners to achieve their conservation goals on their private lands, and whether it's protecting family farms or a family forest or a scenic viewshed or wildlife habitat. And while accomplishing that, there are tremendous benefits to local wildlife populations too. And then on the education side, as we've touched on, we're doing more and more outreach work in the community to try to reconnect people, especially our youth, to our natural resources. And that's just incredibly exciting to me, to be working with teachers and students, getting kids outside, learning about the outdoors, learning about forestry and water resources and wildlife issues. So it's just a really exciting and meaningful mix of activities that we have going on at KLT.
And it's not just the two of you, is it?
No, Phil, and you're absolutely right in the sort of diversity of experiences and skill sets that's required to operate a land trust. And if you think about what we do real estate work, we do fundraising work, we do, as Reagan said, the education component, and we do the administration of an office, which isn't necessarily, you know, to be taken for granted either. We currently have four staff, which equates to 3.5 full-time employees. We have Ann Mitchell, our administrative assistant, who really keeps everything running and everything going, moving forward. We then also have Suzanne Tugman, who's our outreach coordinator. She's the one who's investigating potential opportunities for us to be in the community. She's thinking about, you know, how we can have a broader impact on the people that we serve. And then Reagan here is the sort of the more of the science and training, the education individual. And theoretically, I lead the organization and keep everybody on track, but I don't really need to do much of that.
Sounds like everyone's doing a good job. You've told us something about the staff at the Land Trust, and I'd be interested in knowing more about the individual landowners who have come to know you and grant easements, donate property, etc. Tell us more about those folks.
Yeah, good question, Julie. Over the years since KLT's inception, we've helped 11 different families. Well, we've been involved in more projects than that, but we actually hold 11 conservation easements in both Bonner County and Sanders County, and I've worked with a wide range of individuals from the family who has a 100-acre family farm on the edge of town and can see the encroaching threat of development and just wants to make sure that their farm can remain a farm even after their time, to the couple that has an acreage maybe on the Pack River that has incredible habitat for wildlife. Maybe they want to allow one home to be built in the future on their 40 acres, but for the most part, they'd like it to stay open space so that the birds and the deer and bear and elk that use their property can continue to range there. A couple of the projects that we've worked on over the years that might be familiar to our community members are the Western Pleasure Guest Ranch up on Gold Creek. We worked with the Wood family to help see that that land protected several years ago. And also the Sherwood Forest, the Syringa, the network of trails that some people know as the Syringa Trails, just west of Sandpoint here. That property is also one that we helped protect. We hold an easement over that property to ensure that it's never developed and always remains as open space.
So those two local treasures will remain just as they are now.
That's right. That's right, in perpetuity. And I know forever is a long time, but that's it's interesting. Land trusts are actually the only nonprofit organization that is designed to last forever, because that's our mission, is permanent land protection.
Do you interact much with the landowners on a regular basis? Do you see them every month or year?
Yeah, I as part of our stewardship program, I visit these properties at least once a year to just check in with the landowners, see if they have any questions about, you know, anything that we can do to help with managing their forestry resources, or maybe they have an eroding stream bank and we can help refer them to local resource professionals to help mitigate that. And also just to walk the properties and make sure the terms of the easement are still being honored. And in addition, there are often instances throughout the year on top of those regular visits to interact and just check. And we have great relationships and really value the relationships that we have with the landowners that we're involved with.
Do you ever do a big summer picnic, an extended family reunion, get all 11 families together for a barbecue, let them fight a little like families do? No?
Not yet, but I like that idea, Phil. Maybe you can help us coordinate that.
No, it could be fun. It could be a lot of fun. I'll plan it for when I'm out of town.
Okay. The ones who haven't quite decided to give the land yet, though, it might be a little tricky. I imagine there must be quite a range of uses on the individual parcels that you're helping with. We've heard about the two parcels that folks have public access to, and those are treasures. There must be ones that you're wanting to remain more protected. Are there some that there isn't public access to?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because the conservation easement that we work with does not allow public access. It does not. It's not an automatic green light for the public to enter onto these lands. So that's really an important point, and one that's often a common misperception. So public access is a decision that's still up to the owner of the property, and it's separate from the conservation easement agreement that a landowner may enter into with KLT.
So I noticed in your recent newsletter some photos from Washington, D.C. Mr. Grace went to D.C. What did he find?
Do you want my honest answer or my cynical answer?
It's election day, so be careful.
Well, I did go to Washington, D.C. I went to D.C. as part of a what's called fly-in. So land trusts from around the country were asked to come to D.C. and meet with our individual elected officials there. So in the case of, in our case, I met with our senators from Idaho. I met with our congressman from Idaho. And I also met with some of our Montana delegation as well. And the purpose of that trip was not to, in this case, was not to ask for anything in particular this time around, but the purpose was to meet with these folks, to meet with the decision makers, and just let them know the importance of the work that we're doing. We find that a lot of times decisions are made in a vacuum. I think that's a truism across the country, and that if the decision makers don't understand the nuances of the issues that they're dealing with, oftentimes the decisions aren't made in the most educated way. So it was up to us and the land trust community to spend some time meeting with our elected officials and talking about the benefits of the work that we do, the benefits to the community, the impacts that the work that we have, what those impacts on the folks that we're working with. So we had great meetings with Congressman Simpson, Raul Labrador, Risch and Crapo. I actually met with all of them, not necessarily with them one-on-one, but certainly with their staff. And it's about a 20-minute or 30-minute discussion we have with them and talking about the work that we're doing. And they were all very receptive. They all like, in theory, the concept of permanent land protection. But there's always some very good questions that they ask, and so we just need to make sure that they hear our side of the story.
Well, that sounds very encouraging, actually. If you're just tuning in, this is 88.5 FM, Community Radio for North Idaho. We're going to take a short music break. When we get through with the music break, we're going to come back and hear a little bit more about some of the specific programs from Kinnexu Land Trust. We're here with Eric Grace and Regan Plum. Right now, we're going to listen to a little bit of Blackbird by the Beatles. That was the Beatles with Blackbird. You think you'll find any blackbirds this weekend?
I bet we will.
I hope so.
Starlings, blackbirds, raffles.
Right. We're back with Regan Plum and Eric Grace from the Kinnexu Land Trust, talking about land trusts and the BioBlitz this weekend.
That's right, the BioBlitz, and also Lost in the 50s. But back to the BioBlitz and Kinnexu Land Trust. Question that I've been thinking about while you've been talking to us about the land trust is more about, I'd like to hear more about, how do folks find you? How do you find folks? Do you have an active plan for acquiring lands? Tell us more about that process.
Well, why don't I start on the sort of the high level? We, being conservationists, we do have a pretty good read on the landscape, and we know what the important areas are for habitat, for wildlife protection, for recreation, for agriculture. And in fact, sort of on a side note, the community just went through what was called a green print. There was a story on this in the newspaper in the Daily Bee just the other day that actually worked with the entire community identifying areas that the community feels are important to protect. So that's going to be a really important document for us as we move forward in working with landowners and targeting landowners to do conservation work with. However, we're not always in the position of having the resources to go out and actually sort of engage landowners in discussion. So oftentimes what happens is the landowner just comes to us because they have a conservation vision for their property. So they reach out to us. Regan, why don't you talk a little bit about the specifics of how we identify what's on the property?
Yeah, so often, generally what will happen is the landowner will call us, or maybe they called the Nature Conservancy first, or called Inland Northwest Land Conservancy first, or maybe they just Googled, land conservation in North Idaho and found us that way, and they'll call us up and say, hey, I've got, my family's had this 100-acre forest. We have a summer cabin on the lake, and we're getting older. We don't have heirs that are going to be looking after the property, and we just would love for it to stay open land so it can be enjoyed by the public who are going by in their boats, or the next owner can continue to enjoy the forest resources. Is there something you can do to help? And then I'll start by explaining how the conservation agreements work, and we'll have an ongoing discussion about that. And if the landowner continues to be interested in pursuing a conservation easement, then the next step for us is to take it to our board of directors, which is a group of people that have expertise in natural resources, real estate, wildlife habitat, a variety of backgrounds. And those people will take a close look at the parcel of land, go out and visit it, and just make sure that it's a good fit. We really need to make sure that it's a property that has enough conservation value that it justifies the time and effort that our organization puts in to the process, and also that it's something that we're able to maintain into the future. So it can be lengthy. A simple conservation easement can take 6 months to a year to complete, and then a more complicated one can take longer than that.
So it's really a long-term process and project.
Unfortunately, it is.
Nothing happens fast.
Nothing happens quickly. We like to think that we're nonprofit and we're nimble and we can get a deal done quickly. However, the nature of the transaction, there's a lot of paperwork that needs to happen, a lot of on-the-ground field study that needs to happen. The property owner may want to get an appraisal done of the property. They theoretically can qualify for a tax deduction if it's a donated conservation easement, which is the sort of the economic incentive for doing something like this. But if they want to get the tax deduction, then they have to have a valuation done, and that can take 3 to 6 months, and survey work and title work. It's a complicated real estate transaction when you get down to the nuts and bolts.
Some of the more nimble, quicker things you do are educational programs, but before we move into those, are there any other things you'd like to observe or talk about the work you do and its importance?
Well, just one other thing. We've been talking a lot about conservation easements because that has historically been the sort of the primary conservation tool that we use. But in the last couple of years, since we've been thinking about broadening the work that we do and trying to broaden the impacts to a larger community, we are currently working with a couple of landowners for the Kinnexu Land Trust to actually purchase the property, which we would then manage as almost like a park. We would have trails on them. We would allow for public access. We would allow for school groups to go and do educational programming. And we're excited to say we just received a grant to buy, I think it's a 70 or 80 acre parcel over right on the Idaho-Montana line, actually in Montana. So it's in the town of Knoxon or Heron, and we're currently working with another landowner that we hope to come to terms with, where we would buy a piece of property closer to Sandpoint, which we would then own and manage for the public access.
So would you keep those titles long term, or would you turn them over to a public entity, county, federal, state?
No, we would own these. These would be Kinnexu Land Trust properties, and for the assessors out there, they would stay on the tax rolls. We would maintain the property tax base. Right. We don't want to erode that, but we would, in essence, it would feel like a public preserve. We would manage it for the public access opportunities. Obviously, we're not looking to make ball fields or high impact recreation use, but more quiet, passive recreation use. Just some trails for hiking.
So there'd be an easement on your ownership of it. Would you hold that easement, or would some other land trust hold that easement?
Phil.
I know, probably it's complicated way too quickly.
Don't be so complicated. I'll give you the 10-second answer. No, we can't legally hold a conservation easement and own land. We could transfer the conservation easement to another conservation organization, but property law prohibits us from doing that. Keep it simple.
That's a good short answer.
It gets tricky, doesn't it? It starts to get a little tricky.
Mm-hmm. Well, but before we go down that rabbit hole, we'll be looking for more rabbit holes this weekend. The BioBlitz, which has got to be one of the more interesting programs done by any conservation group locally. I look at it from watching the work of the Kinnexu Land Trust over the last several years, probably as the culmination of a number of interesting programs. Let's talk a little bit about some of those. What are some of the highlighted programs you've engaged in?
Well, I think just to step back a little bit, and we made a conscious effort 2 years ago or so we've been talking a lot about conservation easements, private property, ownership, that kind of thing. What we're finding is, that was great for a very small segment of the population. If you happen to be a landowner and can benefit from a conservation easement, that's great. Or if we're protecting, habitat, as I said, with the bull trout example, if we're protecting bull trout habitat, that's great if you're a fisherman or if you happen to be a bull trout. But we were not having much of an impact on, the majority of the population. So we took a look at that, and we took a look at our model and realized we really need to get out in the community, and we need to make the conservation work that we do much more relevant to everybody, not just bird watchers, not just hikers, not just mountain bikers. Those people are very important to us. Obviously, they benefit from the work that we do, but we're preaching to the choir. There's a number of populations in our service area who simply don't go outside. I think 50% or 55% of Bonner County does not actively engage in outdoor recreation of any sort. In other words, they get in their car in the morning and they drive to work and then they drive home. So that is contributing to what's an unfortunate epidemic. There's 50% of our population nationally that suffers from some sort of chronic disease, whether it's mental or physical. And if you look at the trends in kids these days, it's all about, you know, staying inside and playing video games or glued to your smartphone and not really creating the connection that we feel is vital to community health, to individual health. Now, while Sandpoint and the surrounding communities are very engaged in outdoor recreation, that's only a small population, a small percentage of the population. So the Kinnexia Land Trust realized this and realized that if we want to have as big of an impact as possible, we need to be making conservation relevant to everybody. And at that point, then we brought on Suzanne Tugman, our outreach coordinator, and she really started diving into this issue and trying to figure out what kind of programming can we do that goes beyond preaching to the choir, that goes beyond telling the story to the people who have heard it over and over again, and taking that to the people who don't even know that we exist, and then also doing it in an authentic way so that it is establishing or connecting or reconnecting, you know, the individual back to nature.
Well, I suppose I've heard a thank for the stories I see when I'm out walking along the lakeshore on the edge of town, the storybook. Does that have something to do with Susan, the Storybook Walk Project?
Absolutely. The Story Walk Project is a partnership that we developed over the winter with the East Banner County Library, and it's been such a joy for Suzanne Tugman and I to work with Suzanne Davis, the children's librarian over there at the library. The Story Walk Project is a collaborative between KLT and the library, and the goal is to promote literacy and also outdoor activity and connection with nature at the same time. So what we've done is dismantled children's picture books that are all very thoughtfully chosen by Suzanne Davis, and she just knows the best of the best. It's incredible, the books that she comes up with. So we dismantle those, laminate the pages, and then set up stations along trails and parks and open space. We started out out in Dover at the Dover Park, and right now we have one up in McNierney Park in Ponderé, and also at the University of Idaho land on Boyer. We had one over on the Ponderé Bay Trail for a week or so around Earth Day, and it's just been a really fun way to encourage families to get outside and read with their kids and be active in nature.
That's a great one, noticeable. What about the Park Prescription Program? That's a tongue twister.
Yeah, the PPP. This was, again, came out of the realization that there's a real issue with chronic disease. And could we as a land trust work with folks who are suffering from diabetes, mental health disorders? And basically, we now coordinate with medical practitioners, giving them opportunities to physically write a prescription for their patient to go outside and take a hike or get some exercise. Again, reconnecting them to nature. And these are individuals who, you know, who maybe can't walk more than a quarter mile. So we rate a bunch of trails on levels 1 to 4. A level 1 trail would be a trail that has a bench every 50 yards so that the patient can stop and take a break. And then we compile all of this information and give it to the medical practitioners so that they have the information they need to be writing these prescriptions. It's taking off like wildfire. We're actually being studied at the national level now as an organization that really knows how to implement a park prescription program. So you'll be hearing a lot more about that in the future.
Yeah, I love that idea.
So there's programs for kids, there's programs for the folks you just mentioned who might benefit from it health-wise, mental or physically. The full range of programs for all ages, it sounds like.
That's right. I know we're running out of time, but I just wanted to mention really briefly our education work. We started last summer working with Clark Fork Junior Senior High School over in Clark Fork, and over this past year I've helped them to design and implement a brand new outdoor education program that's met approximately once a week, where a portion of their student body goes outside and learns about wetlands or forestry or primitive skills or snow science. And that's been a really exciting and successful partnership. And as a result of that, we're planning to expand our educational programming this next fall to include a number of elementary schools in the area.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
I noted somewhere that you've also been working with Kinderhaven.
We have. Last summer, we initiated a program with them where every week we had either staff here or volunteers take the Kinderhaven kids just outside on a nature visit. Maybe it was hiking the Pend Oreille Bay Trail, picking blueberries at the blueberry farm. These are kids who have been given the short end of the stick in life, and we felt that mm-hmm. if we could provide an opportunity for them to get outside and experience all the wonders and joy that nature can bring, yeah. that would be a really meaningful thing for them. The staff has been terrific to work with at Kinderhaven. They love the program, a wonderful partner with it, and we plan on reinitiating that once the school season is over this summer.
So we are running a little close on time, but I know we want to circle back on the BioBlitz at least one more time.
Well, thank you, and what a great opportunity. If you want to know about any of this information, we would recommend that you come to the BioBlitz, and there will be all the staff will be on the grounds for the 2 days that we're there. One thing we really are highlighting is there will be a dinner from 5 to 7 on Friday night, open to the community. We will have Glenn McLaren as our keynote speaker. I will be saying a couple of remarks on the Kinigsu Land Trust. Charles Buck from the University of Idaho will be on hand. All the scientists will be there. So if you're into talking about critters and slugs and bugs and stuff like that, come meet the scientists.
Is the dinner something people have to sign up ahead of, or is it a potluck?
The dinner is, we would love to know an approximate headcount, but we know that that's very difficult to do. So if you know that you're going to come, please just give the office a call. That's at 263-9471, or you can go on our website, kinigsu.org, and you can pull off our email address. There will be, after dinner, there will be a community bonfire. John Hastings from local hero will be there playing his guitar and singing some songs. The dinner is $10 per person, but there'll be plenty of food, and there could be some adult beverages or not, depending on what you want.
Tell us where it is again.
The BioBlitz is happening on the University of Idaho property. It's on North Boyer Road, right across from the airport.
All right.
And are you still looking for volunteers? If people need to get engaged or want to get engaged, how can they do so?
Just give us a call. We're still looking for volunteers to help both with the biological surveys, listening for frogs on Friday night, looking for birds on Saturday morning. We're going to be rolling over stumps and rocks, trying to find salamanders and creepy crawlies and all manner of other things, plants. There's a team coming up from the University of Idaho that's planning to take a collection for the herbarium down there, so we're going to need lots of hands-on. And we'll also need some administrative help, just helping to check people in and manage the food service and whatnot. So lots of opportunities. Please give us a call.
Well, we'd like to thank both Eric and Regan for joining us this morning to talk about the Kinigsu Land Trust and the BioBlitz. You're listening to 88.5 KRFY in Pend Oreille. Julie and I will be back in a few minutes with a little bit of community calendar and some other stuff. Right now, we're going to go to a short music segment. We're going to listen to Lyle Lovett's song about bears. That was Lyle Lovett with his song about bears. We just heard from Eric Regan and, Eric Grace and Regan Plum about their look for flora and fauna this weekend, the BioBlitz. Should be a lot of fun.
It's very interesting. Phil, I thought it was amazing that half of our people in our county are not getting outside regularly. Well, we've got to get them out there for the BioBlitz this weekend.
It's up to all of us to lead people outdoors,
I think. That's right. And if not that, lost in the 50s. Let's talk about some of the events happening this weekend. You should get ready to rock because this is the weekend for Lost in the 50s, and that's the annual retro celebration, May 19th through 22nd. As you know, it's all about old cars, 50s music, lots of fun. You'll be hearing a lot of music from KRFY this weekend, so don't miss it. If you're a biker on Wednesday, you should plan to bike to work. That's Bike to Work Day. Hop on your bike and bike to work. It's part of the Pend Oreille Peddlers Bike Month activities. And start up your day with a ride to the outdoor experience on First Avenue. There's a free pancake breakfast at 7 a.m. until 10 a.m. So don't miss that one. And then finally, don't forget about the BioBlitz, which is happening this weekend. And as you know, that's going to be sponsored by the Kinigsu Land Trust and really a worthwhile event if you can make it to that one. Let's talk a bit about what's going on with the morning shows this week. First of all, we've got tomorrow's morning show. You'll be joining Chris Bessler and Susie Prez, and that's going to be a morning show, our morning show, their morning show, tomorrow morning from 8 to 9 a.m., and that is the primary election 2016 recap.
So don't forget, get out today and vote.
For sure. On Thursday, you'll be listening to Jack Peterson at 8 a.m., and his guest will be Bill Collier from the Veteran. He's the Veterans Outreach Coordinator. Additional guests will be Patricia Walker-White, along with actors and directors from the Panada Playhouse Dinner Theater Group. And then finally, be sure to catch our programs in the following weeks. Next week on Tuesday, that will be the 24th, we will be having a fishing update featuring Andy Dux. He's the regional fisheries manager from Idaho Fish and Game. And the week after that, on the 31st, don't miss our weed update with Ken Thacker. And that is going to be interesting. I've been looking forward to it, Phil.
Yeah, he'll be talking a lot about weeds. He'll also be talking a little bit about programs for the Native Plant Society coming up and about the project that he and our Britta Meyerly from the Friends of Scotchman Peaks are working on in the Lightning Creek drainage to survey and monitor weeds.
Yes. You know, I'm headed up there, don't you?
That's right.
My first attempt at weed identification. I hope I get it right.
Weeds and BioBlitz. And have you been out fishing yet?
Not really, Phil. I'm embarrassed to say that.
You need to get out this weekend to give us a first-hand fishing report.
More gardening has been happening, like with you. I've been really focusing on gardening, but on to fishing, right?
So this weekend, KRFY is celebrating Lost in the 50s. Take a trip to the 50s on KRFY at 88.5, starting on Thursday, May 19th at 9 a.m. during Sandpoint's legendary Lost in the 50s celebration. There'll be live DJs playing favorite tunes from the pioneers of rock and roll. Sounds like a lot of fun.
Does.
So dance to the oldies on KRFY at 88.5 on the radio or streaming at KRFY.org or at TuneIn.com. Now, I didn't know about TuneIn.com. That must be something that consolidates a lot of radio stations.
I have no idea what that is. I'm going to check it out.
As always, if you enjoyed the show and you want to listen to it again or missed part of it, we will have a podcast of today's shows and previous shows on the website, the homepage of KRFY.org. We also are live streaming if you're out of town in the next few days and want to hear the morning shows, or next week and want to hear the morning shows, live streaming at KRFY.org. Any other big events this weekend, Julie?
Oh, we've got one or two more, Phil. Let me just quick check one out here. Oh, there is an interesting bird watch taking place, and that's on Saturday the 21st. Friends of Kootenai National Wildlife Refuge are having an all-volunteer, which is an all-volunteer organization. They're hosting a bird walk, which will be starting at 9 a.m. in the Refuge Education Barn. Bring your binoculars. If you've got a scope, bring that, and plan for warm weather. But that should be a fun one, too.
Well, once again, thanks for listening to KRFY The Morning Show at 88.5, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. To take us out, we're going to celebrate a little bit of the Lost in the 50s with the Everly Brothers. They were the number one song in, I think it was 1958 at this time in May, with All I Have to Do is Dream.
They're great. Well, we'll see you at the Lost in the 50s this weekend, Phil.
Bye, all.